Happy Bitcoin Monday, freaks. It's your host, Odell, for another Citadel Dispatch, the interactive live show focused on actionable Bitcoin and freedom tech discussion. We have a timely topic lined up for this week. I'm very excited about it. We will be talking about home Bitcoin mining, pirate mining, non-institutional mining, and all that good stuff that comes with it. I have John here, founder of FutureBit. How's it going, John?
Good. Great to be on. Like, really excited about this episode, talking about what we're up to.
John, is this the first time? This is not the first time you've been on Dispatch, right?
No, it has. We've been trying to schedule this for the past year, I think.
Well, I'm glad we made it happen. It's not the first time we've had a public conversation. We've done stage panels.
Yeah. We've definitely done a bunch of stuff before, but not this.
Well, I'm glad we finally made it happen. And we have Scott here, lead maintainer of the BitAx open source project. How's it going, Scott?
It's going pretty fantastic. Thanks for having me on here. Pretty excited to be here. Chat with you guys.
Cheers. It's a pleasure to have you both on here. So I think a good place to start is... I think a really interesting... I don't know. Let's start with this. John, you have a new product coming out. FutureBit has a new product coming out. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the product?
Yeah, it's been a wild 2 weeks for us. We just launched the Apollo 2, which is kind of the culmination of all our work at FutureBit for the past, let's say, 8 years or so. This is the product that I've been trying to release for a long time. And I'm really proud the team pulled it off and we're finally able to get it out there. It's pretty much the first time a mass consumer home Bitcoin miner has almost caught up to the latest generation node. So it's a 5-nanometer ASIC, pretty nice efficiencies on it. And our big feature that we're kind of introducing with the product is our revamped 2.0 OS on it. So for those that don't know about FutureBit, what we kind of do in our whole mission is to get as many nodes out there as possible. And how we do it is by combining a full node and a miner in an easy to use box that's plug and play and anybody can get started in 5 minutes. So with this product, we're taking it a step further and we're introducing a way to continue the decentralization of Bitcoin network. And we're launching what we call a Stratum Solo Pool on the device. So anybody will be able to, you know, because the device already runs a full node, anybody will be able to launch their own Stratum Solo Pool on the device and be able to solo mine directly onto the device. And the cool part of that is it's also Stratum server. So you can actually point whatever other miner you have. So let's say you are, you know, a small time miner that has a petahash of S19s, but you want to solo mine to your own node. Now you'll be able to do that with a flick of a button on our device, and not only solo mine on the Apollo itself, but be able to point whatever other hash rate you have to it.
Okay,
that's so cool. That's so cool. This is a first.
Yeah. This is the first time something like this has happened, and it's kind of how I always talk about this in our product is we're trying to get back to where Bitcoin was, where the Bitcoin core software that Satoshi released had the wallet functionality, had the full node functionality, and had the mining capability all in a single piece of software. And that's what actually helped the decentralization in the early days. And what's happened in the past, you know, decade or so is all those three services have kind of split apart and been centralized. So the wallets are mostly on exchanges now. Mining is done mostly by huge server farms and corporations. And nodes are barely even being run by regular people, you know, the hardcore users. So we're trying to change that and bring the whole ecosystem back to how it was in the beginning.
Well, look, John, that's badass. I feel like you got ahead of yourself a little bit. What is the hardware? Why should we be excited about this hardware? What does it mean to we could get to the pool stuff, and I think we should have a decently long conversation about the pool stuff and trade off.
Yeah, definitely. Not.
But the actual hardware. So I'm a consumer. I'm buying this thing instead of buying presumably an S9 or some other. Well, S9's five generations ago, but other some last generation miner. Maybe I'm converting it into a heater or something and trying to do things. You know, how is this different from that? What am I buying?
Yeah. So you guys want to see it first of all?
Yeah, that'd be
yes.
great.
Yes.
Can I make you big? I'm going to make you big.
Yeah. So they can. You can so it's an
it's
actual,
gorgeous.
It's a production sample.
That's badass. Very clean.
That's pretty much what everybody's going to get. You know, it's a little six inch block. What you're getting is a plug and play 120 volt miner anybody can run in their desk. The issue with Bitcoin mining in general and what FutureBit and Scott and others are trying to solve is how can we get more people involved in Bitcoin mining, where most of the machines are 3,000 machines that you can't run in your house. They're super loud. And even if you do run, most people shut off after 2 months when they find out their power bill is $500 a month. So what our approach was, let's make a small enough miner where the power bill would be less, be at the point where most people wouldn't see an impact on their power bill, wouldn't shut it off. So we want someone to buy our product and be like, all right, I want to participate in Bitcoin mining, participate in decentralizing Bitcoin network, be able to earn some sats for doing that and doing it in a way where it's cost effective, where, you know, a latte a month, even if your power is not break even, let's say, in fiat pricing, you'll still continue to run it and stack those sats. And over time, there hasn't been a period in Bitcoin's history where, you know, our users have not earned more Bitcoin than what they've paid for the over a long enough time span. So that's kind of what we're trying to solve with our product is get the people that, you know, have bought Bitcoin, they have Bitcoin at an exchange, have heard about mining, but have dismissed it as something that they can't do. But we're motivating people to be like, all right, here's a product where you can put it on your desk and you can start mining in 5 minutes and super quiet, doesn't cost a lot of money and won't, you know, heat up your house in the middle of. And that's kind of our little niche and what FutureBit does.
Badass. I think that was a good explanation. That's awesome. Yeah. So reducing heat, reducing noise, making it pretty. Just have to plug it into a regular outlet. Don't have to call an electrician over, and do that all in a polished, easy to use user experience.
Right.
Badass. Sorely needed. I look forward to getting my hands on one. Okay. So with that said, you have this pool concept that you've added, this idea of each one of these can be their own solo miner, without a pool. Right. So there's no pool involved in that, but then they can also direct other hash they have to that as if it was a solo pool. Right.
Right. Yeah. So go ahead.
And the trade-off there is the reason people don't solo mine is the reason they pool mine is they have expected rewards. They don't have to, they know okay, on every week I'll get about this much Bitcoin. But with solo mining, it's more of a lottery type of situation where you can mine for a year and get nothing, or maybe you hit a block and you get a ton of Bitcoin, right?
Right. So that's how we position the solo mining aspect. It is a lottery miner. So there's a very small chance that, you know, with our device that's 10 terahash, you'll be able to hit a block. But on the flip side of that, and kind of what our vision is long term, is that doesn't matter on the individual level. What we're trying to change is on the whole network level. So when we have, you know, one person with one node and one device solo mining, if you multiply that across, let's say, a million people across even different devices, not just Futurebit and other, you know, what Scott's doing and other solo miners out there, you get a network effect where people will start finding solo blocks times a day. And that will expand to a good percentage if, you know, what we do is successful and others. And I think that's where we need to get to have free uncensorable blocks on the Bitcoin network, even if it's a small percentage, right? So, you know, we see what's going on in the last couple of weeks with censorship on big pools and all Luke stuff. And we need a different solutions out there that really bring decentralization forward in the way that it should be on the individual level, where individuals decide what blocks are mined. And at the very least, you know that there's going to be at least a couple free blocks out there where you know you're included no matter where it is. So that's kind of like our long-term vision with the solo pool. And again, this can be paired, you know, with big miners as well. So let's say, you know, you're someone that has, you're not a corporate miner, but someone that has a large amount of hash rate, but skill to run your own solo pool. Here's a device where you can just plug in and point your hash to it. And then all of a sudden you're your own pool and mining directly to your own node, which is sorely needed in this space. It is actually one of our biggest feature requests we've had since we launched the original Apollo. So we're really excited for it.
Pretty fucking cool. Scott, so like what is the BitAx project? Like where does BitAx fall into this whole macro environment?
Yeah, the BitAx is a smaller miner, right? It's a half tera hash, right? So it's a 20th of what the Apollo 2 is. So it's a much smaller miner, but I guess on the flip side there, it uses significantly less power too, and it's very quiet and you know, very cheap too. So it's perhaps an even easier way to get people into mining who may have been turned off from doing it, you know, some other way, right? So we can get them in on this through several different angles here, which I think is pretty awesome.
Is the main use of it also this idea of like a lottery miner?
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing about the miner itself that says you have to do solo mining or lottery mining. You could join a pool. It just uses a standard Stratum client to join any kind of pool. But you know, in my opinion, I think solo mining makes the most sense. With these relatively low hash power miners, if you mine with a pool, you're essentially committing to earn very little sats forever. You know, you can't solve your own block when you're mining with a pool. So I think solo mining, lottery mining makes a lot of sense with these micro miners, these home miners.
And people are, so like you can buy like a pre-set up BitAx, I guess, for like $95 or something like that, I saw.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
people are making them themselves. Is that what's going on?
Yeah, that's sort of the concept with the BitAx, is that all the designs are published on GitHub, you know, the hardware, the firmware, the software, everything is out there. So if you are feeling crafty, you can download that stuff and build it. I have some very rough guides out there on how to do it. Not going to lie, it's very hard. It's really hard to build yourself. So be sure you're in for a real project if you want to do it. But several people have done it. I've been, you know, surprised. People have contacted me and been like, I've never soldered anything together before in my life. Can I build this? And I'm like, I don't know.
It's the thing with harder, man. People don't realize how hard it is. And it's like, you get into it, you're like, oh, man, okay, now I get it. Now I get it.
But I've seen people come back and post pictures of what they've soldered, and some of them are just train wrecks. You're like, buddy, that's right. Never going to work. Yeah. Start over. But then on the other hand, I've had people totally do it. One of our biggest contributors, the first thing he ever soldered together was a BitAx, and now he's manufactured them in the hundreds. So, you know, it's just your sort of aptitude for a big project, and you know, diving in and seeing if you want to try and figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is why it's interesting to have both of you guys on the show, because I feel like you both see the same problem, and you've obviously coming at it from completely different perspectives. I don't think these two projects are competition in any way. I think they're largely complementary. I mean, the Apollo 2 is almost, it's like a Mac Mini of home mining. It's like this completely polished project. And then BitAx is this, you know, open source, do-it-yourself project at a much lower entry cost. What is the Apollo 2 retailing at right now? It's 1100?
So just the miner part of it. So we have two versions. So USB miner, which is just the hash unit, is 800 for 10 tera hash. And then if you want the full node and mobility, it's 1099.
Got it.
Yeah, so we're definitely on the higher end of things. And going off your comment, there should be dozens of people like us and dozens of companies doing what I'm doing and Scott is doing. The market is huge, and we need to get a lot more hash rate out there to the people. And that can only be done by projects like this, like FutureBit and Scott Bit. And a lot more new and innovative projects that are coming out that I've seen, which is really cool. And I'm glad that, you know, what we started at FutureBit has started to branch out to other areas. And people are starting to see the value of home mining and bringing hash power back to the people. Because going forward, especially if the BlackRock ETFs and everything else gets approved, there's going to be a lot of more centralization going on in Bitcoin. And, you know, whether you see it as centralization or not, whether you think it's just part of free market dynamics, at the end of the day, power is still getting concentrated. And what a lot of people don't understand is Bitcoin, the system itself, it's not decentralized just by itself. It's decentralized by the people that run it. So if enough people are not running it, as Hal Finney said, you know, you need to be running it at the core level. Otherwise, it will not remain decentralized when there's only, you know, a dozen corporations running nodes and, you know, over 50% of the hash rate is controlled by them. So we need a lot more companies than just us to get the hash rate into people's homes and to get it to the level where we're sure that Bitcoin can't be manipulated and taken control of by centralized powers.
Well, I agree. I would like to go deep on mining pool centralization risks and mining centralization risk in general and like look at the big picture. But before we do, just real quick, one of the other issues we've seen in mining centralization is manufacturer centralization in terms of actually creating the chips. Right. It's largely been dominated by Bitmain and WhatsMiner. I'm curious, like, what are you doing in terms of chips for the Apollo 2? I know the Apollo 1, they weren't like old S9s, which a lot of people thought they were. Like, what is the deal with the chips in the Apollo 2? Like, how does that work?
No, so we've had a great relationship with a partner that we've been kind of co-developing the chips with for the past 5 years. So that relationship is ongoing, and we're continuing to build new generation ASICs. We actually buy our ASICs direct from the fab.
Actual chips direct from the fab.
Yeah, so a lot of people don't know that, but we don't buy third-party ASICs. Our orders go direct to the fab, and that's what we receive.
That's badass.
And that's also why, you know, a lot of people, you know, and I see the comments on BitAx as well. It's like, well, why is this stuff so expensive? It's, you know, when you're buying direct new silicon, it's expensive. You know, people don't realize that the stuff Bitmain is selling you, it's, first of all, it's already used by Bitmain themselves. Bitmain has a history of doing this. They always sell you used stuff. And that's kind of how they bring the prices down to retail when you pick it up at the end of the day. And there's been a market created where people think, oh, that's the price of new silicon. It's like, no, it's not. You know, the silicon that's in the Apollo 2 is $400. So our margins are super low on what we build. And that's kind of always been the philosophy of the company. Price the product to where, you know, I can pay our developers and our people working on it and make a little profit on top. But building hardware, especially at the scale that we're doing it, is super hard, super expensive. And, you know, we also are made in the USA. So that, you know, obviously increases our costs. But again, that's part of the philosophy of the company. It's that I want to bring more production here and get away from reliance of, on Chinese manufacturing. But that's yeah, on the ASIC side as well, we're starting to see that change as well. So obviously Block is creating their own 3-nanometer ASIC, which we'll hopefully be partnering with. And Intel was like, actually kind of a little funny side story. The Apollo 2 was supposed to use Intel's chips. So we were working and had a prototype working with them. And we were about to place a bulk order when they decided to bow out last second. So that's kind of why the product is about 6 months late as well. So we had to pivot and switch back to our old ASIC that we were using.
At least that happened before the order.
Yeah, that would have been bad if it happened as we announced and started production. But yeah, that was a big blow to the industry. We were talking with them and we were kind of trying to get them to be like, you guys need to build an ASIC like you did with the original Pentium processor, where, you know, you built the processor and then you gave it to everybody else to build PCs. And, you know, dozens of companies sprouted up and built the whole revolution that happened because of that. And it was because of Intel. And we were excited that Intel was going to do that for the Bitcoin space. But, you know, unfortunately, them being a huge corporate behemoth, when they saw the profits and margins weren't there, they just shut the program down. And unfortunately, that was for the rest of the industry. But there's a lot popping up in their place. So
yeah, it's a classic bear market casualty. They'll come back into the game,
I'm sure.
Scott, what do you guys do for chips? Like, what's the situation with BitAx?
So the BitAx actually uses Bitmain chips, and not through any sort of partnership or even authorization at all. The project started with reverse engineering the ASIC, the chip in the S9, and then kind of like, there's no documentation, there's no, you know, official data sheet or anything. So it's just sort of figuring out how it works by trial and error. And then did the same thing with the chip out of the S17, and then finally moved to the chip out of the S19 XP, which is what we're currently using. But we buy those chips from the repair market. So these are chips that are slated for ASIC, like repair industry. And they're very expensive because they're just not meant for building into miners. But they are sort of the most popular, the most abundant, and the most performant, I mean, at least for the time being. Like John said, this is changing fast. I'm aware of several other upstarts that are kind of coming at Bitmain, but at least for the time being, they're the best. So yeah, that's what we're using. It's a little bit tenuous of a situation there, being dependent on another manufacturer that doesn't necessarily. Well, I don't think they care, but they're certainly not on board.
Right. Okay, awesome. So let's talk about mining pools. First, I think the first place to start is, Scott, you had the privilege of being at the Ocean Mining Pool launch. Me and John weren't able to make it. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how that was, what the vibes were like?
It was really good vibes, to be honest. I feel like there are several people there that I met in person for the first time, and they seem very edgy and difficult online, but talking with them in person was fantastic. I don't know. I mean,
that's many such cases.
Yeah. So some of the more infamous characters that you or your listeners maybe have read online were fantastic to talk to in person. And my takeaway from it was they're very sincere and sincerely interested in what's best for Bitcoin. It was a really cool event in South Carolina, and part of it was at a hydroelectric generation facility that has, like, you know, from like 1800 whenever, that's been restored.
1800 whenever. I like that.
it was old. I forget the exact date, but Bob Burnett and Barefoot Mining have restored it, brought it back to life. It was kind of cool. They were talking about, like, oh, you know, step one was to get a specialist in antique turbine generators. So, you know, find that guy wherever he is. And then he got it working again. And so we got to do a tour of that facility and see it. And it's beautiful. Cool. And it's, you know, they actually have these huge gates, and they redirect the water into the facility, and the whole thing spun up, and it was really cool. And they've got a bunch of miners on site. So, you know, I thought it was a fantastic event. It was very small. You know, I got a chance to meet and talk to a bunch of cool people, and it seemed, you know, it seemed very genuine to me.
Awesome. So, I mean, the guys at Ocean Pool, Mark and Luke, and their investors who supported them have focused their attention on this concern that we are in a situation right now where mining is, hash rate is going through the roof. If you look at hash rate charts, it's incredibly impressive. It's just growing at a almost nonstop pace. And I like to say that hash rate is the price. It doesn't lead the price. It doesn't lag the price. It is the price, because it's the freest market in the entire world. It's energy for Bitcoin. So on the surface, it's incredibly bullish. But what's happening is the way mining works is miners are contributing work to earn Bitcoin, right? And as a part of that, they are constructing blocks. And they're constructing blocks and choosing which transactions are in the blocks. And that role has been essentially delegated to mining pool operators. If you are in a mining pool, if you're in one of these large mining pools like Foundry or F2 Pool or Ant Pool, or even the smaller ones like Brains or whatnot, what you're doing is you are contributing your work from your miner. But ultimately, the pool operator is deciding which transactions are being mined. And this is a concern because of this idea of protocol censorship risk, this idea that certain transactions might not be included in blocks. And if enough miners come together enough mining pools come together to agree to not mine those transactions, then in effect, those people cannot transact, or at a slightly, in a better scenario, they can still transact, but they have a degraded experience. It costs them a lot more money in transaction fees because, you know, maybe 10% of the hash rate or something will mine with them. So I think Luke and Mark, I agree. I think overwhelmingly well-meaning intent. And the idea is, the perspective is sound, which is, we need to give miners more options. And also, furthermore, the long-term plan for Ocean is that the individual miners construct their blocks rather than the mining pool operator themselves. This idea that a single individual, or, you know, maybe a group of individuals in a mining pool entity gets to dictate which blocks are mined is fraught with centralization risk. They can be pressured. They can act maliciously. But if we widen that net and allow more people to construct their blocks, we're in a better situation. Now, they don't have that implemented yet. They do have this feature where you can see what transactions they plan to include in their block live on their website, which is unheard of. This is the first time I've ever seen that. And the idea is, if you're a miner contributing hash, instead of waiting till after they mine a block to leave them, because that's the great check and balance. That's the one that everyone always says over and over again. Mining pool operator is censoring a transaction. Miners will leave, but they can only leave after the censorship has happened, right? So they show the the block template ahead of time. Luke has historical concerns with certain types of transactions in terms of how much data are included in those transactions. And his block templates are not including those. And so we know about that ahead of time before the blocks are even mined. And so as a result, there's almost like a preemptive controversy, even though they have a small amount of hash rate, that transactions aren't being included. Before I push it to you guys, I just want to say, last but not least, regardless of your ideological views on spam, Bitcoin has a brilliant spam mitigation mechanism, which is the transaction fee market. The whole reason transaction fees exist in the first place is because block space is scarce. Space on Bitcoin's ledger, this ledger that will last for, if we're right, way past our own lifetimes, will last forever, or if not nearly forever, I don't want to speak in fully absolutes, has a scarce amount of space to it. And as a result, we have this pure free market with demand and supply, where transaction fees are dictated. So this idea that the main concept comes down to, if someone wants to spam the network, they will spend a ton of money that will go to miners. It'll improve Bitcoin mining infrastructure, and eventually they will run out of money. That is the simple spam mitigation technique that Bitcoin has. So with all that said, I guess I'll push it to John. Like, John, I mean, you have very strong views on mining centralization risk. How do you view this? You know, did I get anything wrong? Is your perspective different than mine? How do you view the whole ocean controversy? Yada, yada, yada.
I mean, you pretty much hit the nail on the head. At the end of the day, you're either, I mean, listen, it's a hard topic, because you can argue both ways that ordinals and all of that was never meant to be part of Bitcoin,
right?
Snuck in there, which is essentially what did happen. But at the end of the day, there's many mechanisms where they can still use block speed to push ordinals, whether it's through the current BIP that they're using it or not. There's a lot of ways to. So, like you said, people that want to spam are going to spam the Bitcoin, and they have in the past as well. So they've spammed transactions in the past, where it was called a dust spam attack back in the day. But again, it's like you can do that for so long before you run out of money, as you said. And I don't want to get into the point of being the arbiter of what is or is not allowed on the blockchain. People should be deciding that. If people come to a consensus that it should not be happening, then there should be a new Bitcoin Core push and people should start running that. And that's what happens to the network. And that's kind of the philosophy we'll be taking with the Solo Stratum pool. We're going to allow our users to, you know, obviously the latest core is what's going to be pre-installed on the system, but there's going to be an option where people can, you know, if there's certain flags that are part of, let's say, user activated soft fork, users will be able to check or uncheck that flag easily. They'll be able to run their own version of whatever core software they want, or even if it's Bitcoin Knots. So, you know, it should come down to the individual, and that's where decentralization and censorship resistance happens. And again, for that to be effective across the whole Bitcoin network, there needs to be enough people doing this, which they're not currently. So, you know, that's what I want to hammer home, and what I'm doing and why I founded the company is we need to get a lot more people running nodes. People need to understand that, yeah, at the individual level, it might seem that you don't have much power over it, but when there's millions involved, coming together and coming to a consensus that that's and that's where the true power of the Bitcoin network is. And, you know, we need a lot more education around that fact and making sure people understand this. And that's kind of, you know, my stance on the whole thing.
And John's not being hyperbolic marketing terms when he says millions of people. How many Apollo 1s did you sell?
No, we had about 100,000.
That's insane, dude. I don't think anyone realizes that you sold that many units. That's why I repeat it all the time.
That is insane. I did not know that. That's incredibly inspiring. Yeah. That's really cool.
We might have... Oh, he's still here. Yeah, go on. Scott, hit us.
One of the things I wanted to bring up and about the ocean pool, and this is what Mechanic and Luke and I were talking about before the event. I think this detail about the pool has kind of been lost in all the excitement around their ordinal disrespecting, I guess. Anyways, they it's a non-custodial pool, so that they have this kind of interesting technique by which they pay the miners directly from the Coinbase of the mined block. So they don't, except for in the cases of you know very small amounts, like very small miners. For the larger miners, they pay them directly from the block. So the miners are getting the coins created from the Coinbase from the block they solve, and it also kind of puts that decision, you know, should we refund? Remember this drama that recently happened with someone accidentally paid, you know, an insane fee, and then the pool refunded it, right? It's just, I think it's not really an option because it's just, you know, they get paid a percentage of all the fees that are in a block that they solve, which is...
It was up to the miners. It's up to the individual miners if they want to return it rather than up to the pool operator, basically.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, you know, it's unlikely that any one miner is going to even have it all. So it's a pretty interesting concept. And I think it actually has some implications and maybe some applications to home mining because, you know, we sort of are stuck in this, we're not stuck in it, but we're sort of in this solo mining paradigm for home miners because it makes the most financial sense. But you know, if we were to kind of create these smaller decentralized pools where you know groups of home miners could band together to maybe make for somewhat more regular payouts, then a strategy like this where we sort of automate the you know the splitting up of the block, I don't know, it's a pretty interesting idea.
Yeah, can you guys hear me?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, so there's actually a cooler proposal. I don't know if you guys know Bob McCrath, but he's working on
Bob from where?
Bob.
McElrath.
McElrath, yeah.
Gotcha.
He's working on. He actually we've been working with him for him to be our next grantee for FutureBit. Also does his grants.
Nice.
Our first grant that we gave out, and he's the one that helped us build the solo functionality. And we've been working with Bob and talking with Bob about what he's doing. So it's kind of what you talked about, Scott, where it's essentially an updated version of the old P2P pool that existed in the early days of Bitcoin. So yeah. It was a centralized pool where there was no centralized pool operator, but it's essentially people would join the pool and then they would get paid out. The header would be constructed in a way where they would be paid out based on the contribution of hash rate to the block that was found, which was a cool concept, but it kind of failed because big miners could take advantage of that and essentially were in a greater advantage than smaller miners. So what Bob is trying to do is kind of fix the issues with that and launch. It's kind of like a lightning sidechain that works off a second layer mechanism off Bitcoin where there's no centralized entity that's in control of the coins that are mined. But people can join the pool. They get paid out a percentage based on their hash rate. And this is all done automatically on chain. And it's a really cool concept.
That is a really cool concept.
Like all these mechanisms, like this is how pools were, like this idea of getting paid directly from the Coinbase is how pools were in the beginning.
Right.
The problem is that small miners, they get paid dust or they don't get paid at all. Right. Like right. There's so like the default mechanism in Ocean is basically like if you're a small miner, like you get hopefully you'll get paid out in like a year or something. And it just because it like reaches a certain threshold where it's not like dust to get sent the transaction. And it's important to realize that a lot of people will say, oh, but the Coinbase transaction does not have any transaction fees because it's mined, it's included by the miner. Yes, but the next transaction after that does. Right. And as a result, if you get paid out a bunch of small on-chain transactions, you get hit with a overwhelming transaction fee burden. So that's why we've seen like this, one of the reasons we've seen the birth of this idea of custodial pools. Also, a bunch, especially the larger miners, like all these different value-added services that can be added on in terms of like fiat conversion and stuff like that. Loans, you know, a bunch of different like regulated financial products that they like to have on there. And then last but not least, it gives mining pools the ability to offer a predictable reward. So actually what you were mentioning earlier, a lot of mining pools, the way they're set up, aren't obligated to give any of that fee when they get a large accidental fee to their miners. They're choosing because of a business decision that they don't want miners to leave them potentially for someone else. But technically, a lot of these mining pools are based on this formula that just uses the average rewards that happened over a certain amount of time. So, and the miners usually like that because they get predictability. So like these are all, at the end of the day, when you talk about most of the stuff, there's no perfect solutions. There's trade-offs all the way around. And like the idea is to try and give as much options and diversity on the market as possible so that it's not just all one monoculture. But these are things to keep in mind. Now with Ocean, they have a plan to integrate Lightning in a non-custodial way. I don't know what's public and what's not, and I do have some private information there, so I'm not going to go further into that. But the plan is to have some kind of Lightning mechanism where small miners get paid out via Lightning. That is not launched yet. I don't know how much. Like I said, I don't know how much details are out there. But that is the core of all of this, right? The core of all of this to me is the pirate miners, the home miners, the small hash miners are the most likely to be, first of all, ideologically minded and also profit at all costs. Like they're not necessarily hamstrung by like large legal departments and regulatory stuff and all this other stuff. So the small miners tend to be, when you start to think about it big picture, tend to be our last line of defense, right? If a large portion of the hash rate is complying with U.S. government financial regulation or another country's financial regulation, that small subset of home miners and pirate miners will probably still include your transaction. And they act as this bulwark that because they exist there, the larger miners probably won't make that move because they'll just get really hurt financially and it's against their incentive. But the problem is providing a censorship resistant way for them to do that short of solo mining. Like we could have them solo mine and then they're doing lottery, right? But if there could be a middle ground where they could participate in pool mining and as a result lower their variance and not have to wait a year or 2 years or 4 years or never get paid out. In your head, you'd be like, oh, it'd be more likely that we'd get those kind of small hash miners, right? And so that's the holy grail. The holy grail is some kind of mining pool that does that. Now, I would add, I don't know, and this is one of the reasons I wanted Steve Barber on the pool, on the conversation, but I don't know how familiar people are with Steve's mother pool idea that he's been teasing out there. And I do wonder if we've done the typical Bitcoin thing and we've over technologized the argument that we're like trying to like, that's not a word technologized, but that we're trying to just do it through code and through technology, right? Like Stratum V2 is really fucking cool. A rehashed improved PT P2 pool is really cool. Braid pool is a really cool concept. Fetty pools, very cool concept. These are all heavily technical things that are in development and have their own set of trade-offs. But what if we had a pool that he's calling Mother Pool? What if we had a pool that was strictly a nonprofit in the United States that charged 0% fees and didn't have a human controlling the block templates? It was simply whatever the highest fee transactions are, they are included in the block. And then other smaller pools could then connect into there and batch their hash rate for the smaller miners. So the smaller miners could be served by a collection of smaller miners that are then getting paid out from the Coinbase. So instead of trying to solve the small dust Coinbase UTXO problem, you just push that off to another layer. There could be multiple competing custodial entities that are batching hash rate on a local environment. And yeah, like the U.S. government could just shut down that top level nonprofit mother pool entity. But we don't know if that's necessarily like maybe that's enough. Like maybe from a regulation point of view, that's enough. And if that's enough, then why not just do that? That's just a way easier strategy.
Yeah, that would be the easiest way to do it. But again, you're still someone has to run that server and someone has to run that software. And you know, if it's a big pool, then you still have that exposure and risk of censorship there, no matter how good your intentions are. And I think that's the issue with any centralized pool trying to do some sort of decentralized aspect of it.
But this isn't even decentralized. This is just a nonprofit entity constructing the blocks and running the pool software at 0% fee.
Yeah, if the people that are running it and are ideologically motivated, and you know they're just going to run Bitcoin Core and whatever the block template that stock Bitcoin Core spits out, that's great. As long as there's if it gets big, there's no pressure in terms of regulations or anything else. That would be great. But again, it's if it does get to the point where there are OFAC type regulations hammering down on these big miners and pools, you know, they're going to be forced to comply. Otherwise, they're going to get shut down. That's the problem.
Yeah, I wonder if the nonprofit would be shielded. I think the nonprofit might be shielded in that situation. It's just
I don't know about this.
It's not even making any profit off of it. It's a 0% paying out via Coinbase.
But yeah, like you said, the holy grail is the Lightning payments that you mentioned for all miners. That is a big thing.
It's just so fucking complicated. Such an easy thing to say.
Oh yeah.
We're just going to use self custody Lightning for small payments.
We've been dabbling with it in the back end, and it's super hard.
It almost seems like the complexity is unnecessary. Maybe it's necessary for large industrial miners, right? These guys, they have to join a big pool. They have such a large investment in it. They have so many players, such crazy financial incentives as to how their operation works, that they need these big pools with low variance and whatnot, right? But I think, you know, what I'm after, and I think what John is after, is we're gonna arm, you know, potentially a bigger group with miners to mine however it is they see fit, right? And we're hoping for an explosion of tools and different ways to do this, different ways to mine, right? You can solo mine, you can form small private pools with whatever block templates you want, and you know you can create pools for your friends and family. I think there's a lot of people who are interested in doing that, and right now, I mean, president company excluded, right now there's no tools for them. There's no miners, right? The miners that are out there, the majority of the hash rate miners that are out there, are these big industrial machines that no one can practically run in their house. And so it's just a totally different operation, mining with those and in those corporate structures and in the pools that they want. I think we can keep it simple and you know, get back to more fundamentally how Bitcoin works and mine at home. And I don't think it's not an insignificant number of people, I think, that will want to do this.
No, it's definitely not.
We all agree on that.
But yeah,
so again, we're going to make some tools for them so that you know, we can find all the people out there who are willing to do this. And mine, you know, maybe they don't care necessarily what the hash price is. They're more resilient to changes in the hash price, the Bitcoin price. They want to, you know, they want to secure freedom money.
I just wanted to really quickly to listeners that are confused, the Coinbase transaction has nothing to do with the exchange Coinbase. They name themselves after the term. yes. It's the transaction in every block where the miner pays themselves the rewards. Just keep that in mind. Can be confusing.
It is confusing stuff.
Yeah, no, I agree with all this. Let's empower the smaller miners. This is a reason why me and John have had a friendship for a decent amount of time, because I love what he's been focused on over there. And to the Citadel Dispatch listeners, I mean, this is probably like the seventh or eighth conversation on home mining. I will just say, after last cycle, you know, the amount of times if you go back to those episodes and you listen and I was like, just, you know, stay humble about it. You know, don't over leverage yourself. Don't, you know, get one or two miners, you know, maybe learn how it works, get your feet wet, you know, help contribute to the ecosystem, get some KYC free sats. And then like 6 months later, 7 months later, I just hear about freaks who just like aped into like a warehouse full of miners and all this shit. I'm like, what the fuck, guy?
Yeah.
Just don't do that again, freak.
We've heard so many stories of, you know.
It's so bad.
Future. It's tempting. It's been
a gateway drug for a lot of people. So, you know, they get the little itch and then they go crazy. But yeah, it's like this should be about sustaining the network and making it if you can. But, you know, at the end of the day, if you're mining at home, most electricity prices, no matter what you're running, you're not going to be able to break even. So you're doing this because, you know, you truly believe in Bitcoin. And what I say to everybody, and what a lot of our customers are coming from, is they're people that own a little bit of Bitcoin. They have it, whether it's on Coinbase or somewhere else, and they believe in what Bitcoin means for the future, and they want to secure it. And that's kind of the message we've gotten across to them. This is the way to do it. You have to run Bitcoin at the base layer. And, you know, going back to, you know, even talking about the Coinbase, that's the big issue that we have to overcome, is this technical aspect of Bitcoin that's super hard to understand, but is super important for people to understand. Otherwise, they won't get why you need to be running the system and all the stuff everybody's doing around it. And we need to get to a point where we're, first of all, the hardware and the software is to a point where it's super easy to use, and we're starting to get there with FutureBit, but also getting it out there to people that, you know, there's hundreds of millions of people that own Bitcoin worldwide, right? So there's no reason why, let's say, 10% of them wouldn't be running a node or mining, right? There's no reason why 10 million people in the future won't be doing this. And if you look at it today, there's, I think the last time I checked it, there's like 50,000 nodes out there, which is insane. You know, like, it's a super tiny fraction of the Bitcoin's user base.
I'm still proud of 50,000.
I mean, yeah, listen, it's better than it could be much worse, but, you know, based on the number of people that own Bitcoin, it should be much higher. There's no reason why, you know, there shouldn't be, you know, hundreds of thousands of nodes, a million nodes out there right now, especially at this point in Bitcoin cycle. So that's kind of what we.
Well, how many people do you think self-custody Bitcoin?
Probably around the same amount, I would say.
I mean, definitely not whatever number you said for total Bitcoiners. Would you say 100 million for total Bitcoiners?
Yeah.
It's like max 10 million or something for self-custody?
Yeah, some small amount of Bitcoin. I would say there's probably around 100 million.
But yeah. Like self-custody is probably like
10 million. Yeah. It's probably this Oh, no, not even. It's probably the same amount of people that are running nodes.
Well, we know the Ledger leak was 1 million people. So we know at least 1 million people own Ledger hardware wallets. Right. That's like my main, that's stat good. On the bullish self-custody side.
That's some good stats then.
Some of them might be shitcoin only and not holding Bitcoin, but still bullish.
Yes. Yeah.
It's pretty impressive. I mean, it's still a fairly obscure thing. So the fact that there's that many is definitely inspiring. I think, you know, as there's more options, right, as they become easier to use, there's going to be more people picking it up.
I saw one question in the comments, then we'll go to user donations, then we'll do final thoughts. John, there was a question in the comments for you. Can people just buy the miner and not buy the node and just connect that to a pool themselves? Like, obviously, they need the node portion to do the solo mining. Are they able to just buy the miner if they don't have the node part?
Yeah, so we have two versions. One's called the full node deal and one's called standard, which is just, it's a, but it's just a little USB plug in the back that you can hook up to any computer or Raspberry Pi. Run our software and then connect to any pool you want. So you don't have to buy our full setup that comes with the node and the OS on it. You can just buy the miner. And if you have a, let's say you have some or other node or setup at home that you just want to plug it into and add some hash power, that's kind of why we designed it that way.
Awesome. Okay, so Cyril Dispatch has no ads or sponsors. It's supported by viewers like you. So thank you guys for continuing to support the show with Bitcoin donations. All relevant links are at CyrilDispatch.com. The leaderboard is at CyrilDispatch.com/donate. You can support through any podcasting 2.0 apps. As with every Cyril Dispatch episode, I will read the top four in terms of sats donated from last episode. We have Ride or Die Freak, Eric99 with 50,000 sats saying stay humble, stack sats, great advice. We have at Cum Rocket with 12,069 sats saying enjoying Primal so far. We have at Nullifier with 5,000 sats saying I don't like the narrow focus of Nostr used by content creators. I agree. It's going to be for everyone. And we have at Zibs24 with 2,000 sats saying value for value. Freaks, I know you're out there trying to stack as many sats as possible. If you can't spare any sats, the easiest way to support the show is to share it with friends and family. We're available on every major platform. Search Cyril Dispatch in your favorite podcast app, YouTube, Twitch, Rumble, all over the place. And as always, huge shout out to the Ride or Die Freaks who join us in the interactive live chat at CyrilDispatch.com/stream. That uses Nostr. It's powered by Zap.stream. So shout out Kieran for maintaining that project. With all that said, I'd like to wrap with some final thoughts. Scott, final thoughts.
Man, this has been pretty cool, John. I'm super stoked to get to talk to you and hear more about the Apollo and the Apollo 2.
I know, awesome, like, to meet you too.
You had been posting, you know, pictures, sort of candid shots of your development process, laboratory, and everything. And man, I eat that stuff up. This is such a cool, exciting field. I mean, maybe I'm biased, but it's been really cool to hear about it. I want to talk to you some more about this. This is really cool.
I think Scott's asking if you're hiring.
Yeah. Yeah, man. No pressure. We'll talk about it later.
Final thoughts.
Would love to get off and then talk. You know, I could talk hours. I wish I had hours, but, you know, haven't slept in the past 2 weeks at all, but we'll find some time.
Okay, cool, man.
Chat back and forth. I always love. Yeah, and the problem with our space is there's not a lot of people like us that.
There's at least five, right? I mean, four.
There's dozens.
Yeah, but there's saying
several
engineers that can just take you know, something from concept to an actual product. You know, they're a dime a dozen. So I'm glad that there's more people involved in the space now. I think it's really cool, and I'm really excited for the future and what kind of cool products come out in this whole mining space. You know, I just saw something on Twitter where I forgot his name, but he's building like a pool heater. So it's an automated pool heater. just a plug and play pool here where you just plug it in.
Is it not coin heated?
Yeah, I think that's them.
Wait, Constellation or coin heated?
Coin heated. I think it's coin heated.
Coin heated is like the OG pool heater guy. He's like the guy who's like bragging. I forget where he's somewhere up north. It's like Minnesota. It's like 20 degrees outside and his pool's steaming because he's got it running through the miners.
That's right. Yes, the mine for heat crew.
He's a rider die freak. He's been on the show before. John, he was on the panel with us in Miami in 2022, I believe.
Right.
I believe he was.
Okay.
I don't know. It feels like it was a decade ago. Thank you guys for joining us, and thank you guys for focusing on such an important part of Bitcoin. I really do appreciate it. And hopefully we'll have a chat again sometime soon. Huge shout out to the freaks who joined us. Thank you guys. Appreciate you guys. I see someone in the comments saying they're looking forward to 3 hour plus Citadel Dispatch rips again. Well, the caps have come out. The bull has begun its run. And maybe 3 hour dispatch episodes will start to happen again. We'll see. With all that said, love you all. Stay humble, stack sats. Peace.